This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk. This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, I'm Matt Chorley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, they're back. The Impressionists return. You loved the last time they were on the podcast. So we've got the back, John Coleshaw, Rory Bremner, this week joined by Noreen Skinner, giving their impressions of another big political week in the news and rating yours. If you want to send us your impressions for next time, 0333 003 2353 is the WhatsApp. And before that, on the columnists, India Knight and James Marriott, talking about politicians trying to humanise themselves, including Giles Brandreth joins us to discuss him having Keir Starmer on his podcast. And Andrew Neil joins us to discuss what on earth is going on in Scottish politics. And don't forget, if you like what you hear on the podcast, don't forget, you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits live on Times Radio, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. But first, as we always do on the podcast on a Friday, let's take a look at what we learned this week. We learned that Theresa May might have finally got the message.
What the book is about is not trying to, you know, reinstate myself as Prime Minister.
We learned... All right. We learned from Tory Minister Mike Freer that the late Queen wanted to hear all the gossip from Westminster.
Tell me about so-and-so. I gather she's a bit of a handful.
We learned from Tim Shipman that during the Brexit years, the British government took things very seriously.
David Davis's people once sawed off the legs of a chair.
We learned what Ed Vasey wears to bed.
I'm in my pyjamas. Metaphorical pyjamas, ready to do the show.
We learned that Angela Rayner has got a new insult for Rishi Sunak.
A pint-sized loser.
And Oliver Dowden was pleased with his pre-planned comebacks.
It is a pleasure to have another exchange with the Right Honourable Lady in this house. Our fifth in 12 months. Any more of these and she'll be claiming it as her principal residence.
We learn that Joe Biden will read whatever is on the auto cue. Pause.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years.
We learn that Labour's Darren Jones is surprisingly honest about his limitations.
I don't know, actually. It's a good question. I only see economic policy, so I don't know what our position is on it.
We learned that in the week the government's Rwanda bill passed, Home Office Minister Chris Philp isn't quite sure if Congo is in Rwanda.
I mean, Rwanda is a different country of Congo, isn't it?
But the main thing we learned this week is that nine-year-old Cooper does the best seagull impression. And that is what we learned this week. Now, of course, one of the big things we learned this week was that the power-sharing agreement between the Scottish Greens and the SNP has come to an end. I was joined by Andrew Neil, long-time Scottish journalist and keen observer of Scottish politics. I asked him just how bad this was for the SNP.
Oh, it couldn't be worse. It's pretty existential for the First Minister, and it's pretty disastrous for the SNP. I mean, it's pretty much over for Mr. Youssef. He could be gone before today is out. He could be gone over the weekend, or he could be gone sometime next week or sometime in May. We don't know exactly when, but he will be gone. It's finished. His time is over. Alexander's right. He will be known as Hamza the Brief. And he's just proved not up to the job. He was never the sharpest pencil in the box. He's managed to lose support all around him. His fate now hangs on a woman who used to be an MSP for the SNP, but she defected to Alex Salmond's party, a woman that he said when she left that she would be no great loss. Well, that no great loss is now the woman that could determine his short-term fate.
Was it an impossible job for Hamza Yousaf, replacing Nicola Sturgeon, both after a long time in with her as First Minister, but then given everything that's been going on in the party and the police investigation and so on, what was it an impossible job, or did he make a bad job worse?
Well, it was an impossible job because he's not up to it. So I think at any time he would have floundered and found it difficult. But it was, and I think the implication of your question is right, it was particularly difficult for him, given he wasn't up to it, in the manner in which he inherited it. You know, the SNP have been in power for longer than the Tories in Westminster now. We know how the Tories are doing in Westminster. They're cruising for a bruising. The SNP have been in power in Scotland for 17 years. They've got little to show for it. Above all, and what matters to them, what gets them out of bed in the morning, which is independence, separation from the rest of the United Kingdom. They've got nowhere on that. That is going nowhere. It was beginning to fray at the edges. Nicola Sturgeon had been allowed the Greens, a pretty extreme Green party, to take the SNP down very unpopular routes, from gender recognition to a terrible return bottling scheme. Everything they touched turned to dust. And so you add all that up together, it was not a good time. Plus, of course, the fact that Mick Plodd, knacker of the Scotland Yard in Edinburgh, had been investigating the SNP for corruption. And of course, that has resulted in the arrest and charging of Nicola Sturgeon's husband. So not great, not something that even a very accomplished First Minister would have found easy, something that clearly has been totally beyond Mr. Yousaf.
Andrew, you've watched a lot of Scottish politics over the years, and there's been the ups and downs, the Labour Party's dominance, and then its collapse, and then the SNP's dominance, and teetering on the brink of independence. When you look at it now, do you just think that Keir Starmer's just the luckiest man in Britain?
Well, it's always been the case in Britain that it's very hard for Labour to form a majority in Westminster without Scotland. And Scotland used to regularly provide 40, 45 MPs of all the Labour Party into Westminster. Now, it looks like Mr. Starmer is going to win by enough that he might not even need Scotland to form the next government. He may have a comfortable majority without it. But if, as looks likely, he's also got Scotland back on board, then that makes it pretty much a slam dunk that he becomes the next prime minister. There is a problem underneath all this party politics, though, in that Scotland is now in quite serious decline. After 17 years of SNP rule, the health service is a complete mess. They can't even build two bog-standard ferries. Indeed, the ones they started in Turkey building look like they'll be ready before the ones that they started many years before trying to build in Scotland. And the Scottish education system, something I feel particularly strongly about as a product of it, which used to be among the best in the world, is now plummeting down the league tables. So whoever takes over from this mess of Mr. Yousaf, from the SNP, have got a real problem in Scotland. And I just add also, of course, that the financial sector in Scotland, which was always part of an integral part of the economy, never really recovered from the Great Crash, of which, of course, the Royal Bank of Scotland and the Bank of Scotland were two major casualties. And the North Sea oil and gas is running out, particularly running out because the Greens made sure that no one could really exploit it. So it's not a, whoever inherits this is not a happy inheritance in Scotland. When you look beyond the ups and downs of party politics, you see a proud, previously successful country now in quite serious decline.
And is that, would you put that down to spending so much time talking about, thinking about, campaigning for, producing policy documents on the issue of Scottish independence and not getting on with the day job?
I would put it down to two things. One, the one that you've just made, this obsession with independence above. I mean, you know, they're still producing independence papers. Although there is no prospect of another referendum, no chance of independence for the foreseeable future, I would say no chance for at least a generation. Yesterday, they produced another independence paper on justice in an independent Scotland. Well, no one cares. Nobody gives a monkeys about that anymore. It's not going to happen. So this obsession meant they didn't get on with the day job. But also, they presided over the domestic affairs of Scotland on those issues which are all wholly devolved to Scotland, above all health and education, what two things could matter more domestically, without a single attempt to reform these services or make them better. So the health services was just bung it more money, and that didn't do the job. The waiting lists are higher than ever. And on education, you know, other than the private schools and one particular school that the West of Scotland elite sends its kids to, every school in Scotland is what Alistair Campbell called a bog standard comprehensive. There are no academies. There are no free schools. None of the reforms that were introduced under Tony Blair ever happened in Scotland. None that were introduced under Mr. Cameron or Michael Gove ever happened in Scotland. So there was no reform of the public sector whatsoever. And the consequence is that the public sector across the piece now performs worse than it does in England. And that's not exactly a high bar, to be even worse than what it is in England.
Just finally, Andrew, I know you're very plugged in. There's a rumour which has been sweeping around Westminster this week that Rishi Sunak might call the general election on Monday. The extent to which this is one person's thought, which has then been passed on to a sort of network of Chinese whispers, I'm not totally sure. I think the idea being that we'll all forget about how bad the local elections are if we're giving up for a general election. What's your reading of it? Do you think he might be even tempted to do that?
I think there's no credibility in that at all. There is an argument going on in 10 Downing Street, which I'm quite surprised about, that some people think maybe they should cut and run and go in summer, because they think they might cut their losses that way. I think that's complete nonsense. The only hope, and it's a very, very slight hope, the only hope the Tories have is holding on to late autumn, when inflation could be down to 2% or even less. There could be growth back in the economy. There'd be another mini budget with a further cut in national insurance and so on. That at least may give them some kind of fighting chance, not to win, but maybe to mitigate the size of Labour's majority. If they want to go now, it just means they've given up the ghost and they are going to be thumped. So I doubt, you know, even turkeys don't vote for Christmas. So I would be amazed if the Tories decided to do that. If they did, it means they're just throwing in the towel. And politicians actually don't usually give up the perks of office until they really have to. And at the moment, they don't have to.
That was Andrew Neil there. More on all of that with these two.
The Columnists with Night at the Marriott. India Knight and James Marriott.
I was hunched on my bedroom floor of my laptop, frantically battering away at my column.
And India Knight's here. Hello, India.
Morning.
And James Marriott's here. Hello, James.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Tip top.
Excellent.
Pumped.
Good. Oh, a bit too much, actually, maybe. Didn't that much excitement on a Friday morning.
Come on, James, a bit of energy. Come on.
This is Zoo Radio. No, it's a relaxing listen.
Right, let's start with the sort of the big political story of the week. What on earth is going on in Scotland? Barely a year ago, this time last year, Nicola Sturgeon announced she was resigning, but it hadn't actually gone. You know, they were riding high in the polls. They were, you know, people still wanted independence. She seemed unassailable, you know, and now we're looking at potentially at any moment he could resign with no majority in the Scottish Parliament. There could potentially be a Scottish election if, depending on how other opposition parties vote. It looks like if that were the case, the Labour Party would give them a good run for their money. And suddenly, you know, if nothing else, the union's safe, India.
It's a big fat mess, isn't it? I think he's toast. They don't seem to be very good at maths. I mean, could they not see, work out the numbers? Could they not see what would happen? It's all a bit odd. I mean, It's also really interesting. The depth of the mess is fascinating because obviously when the S&P dropped its policy to reduce CO2 emissions by 75%, I think it was, by 2030, the green ministers, the two green ministers, who are also the leaders of the Green Party, didn't resign. And obviously the green membership was outraged at dropping this policy. So that coalition was on its deathbed anyway. And then you've got the whole kind of split within the SNP. You know, you've got the kind of Salmonites who are on the right of the party who really dislike all the gender stuff. And then you have the Sturgeonites on the left, but Sturgeon made it possible for Hamza to be elected, but all of her prestige has since evaporated. So that's now... You know, it doesn't mean anything. It's become meaningless.
He won by being the continuity candidate.
Yeah, and then, exactly.
No, that's not what we wanted. So it's all unwound yet.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's sort of a fascinating tribute to the way that, you know, one really iconic leader who's good with the media can just hold together a whole situation for years and years and years and years. And as soon as that person leaves, it can all be revealed to be a bit of a mess. I always think this whole situation always makes me think of Angela Merkel in Germany, who, you know, defined a political era and she left, you know, full of tributes and hasn't she done marvelously. And then in hindsight, I think people quickly realized that everything that had been going on wasn't as, you know, perfect and brilliantly managed as they thought, and all the policies suddenly seemed like they weren't, you know, the right thing. And one personality can just do an amazing amount in politics to hold a situation together that might, as we've discovered, be completely rotten underneath. Politics is so fascinating. I wonder, I mean, I have to admit, I'm not a close follower of the Scottish National Party, but had I been close, you know, if you were really close up to that, I think, would you have understood that take Nicola Sturgeon out and everything begins to sort of fall apart? Would you have...
Well, I mean, I suppose to some extent, it proves that politics is a people business.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the reasons, you know, looking at Tim Shipman's book out this week on, you know, what went on in Theresa May, a big part of what went wrong with Theresa May is she wasn't very good with people. She wasn't very good at finding out what people wanted.
Yeah.
And she wasn't very good at then trying to give as many people as possible happy. And that's, you know, a big part of politics.
And Nicola...
It seems like Humza Yousaf has fallen foul of the same issue.
Yeah, and comes across that kind of slight Theresa May lack of conviction and confidence and faffiness that you just realise the fact that every time Nicola Sturgeon stood up and seemed like she absolutely knew what she believed in and, you know, was going to, you know, be uncompromising, and that counts for so much. That just impression of strength, even if it's just an impression, can hold together a whole otherwise, you know, evidently slightly chaotic political situation. It's so interesting.
And India, the what this then means for, I was supposed to imagine Neil earlier, I made this point to him. Keir Starmer is basically the luckiest man in Britain, because he went from, you know, he managed to navigate from being a backbencher to being Labour leader in pretty quick, smart time and navigating through the Corbyn Easter era and all of that. But to have had as his opponents first Boris Johnson, then Liz Truss, then Rishi Sunak, and in Scotland to see the disappearance of Nicola Sturgeon and then Humza Yousaf. You know, that is...
Yeah, because not that long ago, Labour, which had been on the ascendant in Scotland, was completely finished.
Yeah.
You know, really recently. I mean, it feels like 2 minutes ago. So, yeah, he's extremely fortunate. To pick up on what James was saying about people who project strength, I think there's a lot in this about over-articulacy. Both Alex Salmond and Nicola Sturgeon were highly, highly articulate and good at oratory, and you can see how anybody in Scotland listening would be kind of lulled along, you know, because you think this is great, this person's across everything, they're expressing it so succinctly and understandably, and therefore everything is marvellous. And of course it wasn't. It's really interesting, and you could even argue actually that the over-articulacy thing kind of applies to Boris Johnson in a different way. But you know, the reason people voted for him was they liked how he sounded. And yeah, it's difficult, because obviously you want articulate people, because inarticulate people are, you know, not confidence inspiring. But it's kind of smoke and mirrors, isn't it?
And I suppose the point that Andrew Neil was making was that they've spent so long talking about independence and how lovely everything's going to be when they're independent that they haven't got on with the day job. That, you know, the school system in particular in Scotland is in a mess. having signed up to these green targets, then and felt that they couldn't deliver them. And yet, the part of the problem is, so literally arriving almost simultaneously, messages in. One from AK saying, Andrew Neil, oil and gas running out. Heard that one since the 1970s. Scotland has the best performing A&E in the UK. Which I think is, it might be debatable, but also it's just, I mean, the A&E is terrible everywhere. More doctors and nurses than the UK per head. Lowest crime, lowest youth unemployment, lowest child poverty, and over 50% of the population still supporting independence. It's one thing. Flip side, Jerome says, Sturgeon ran out of PR steam that could no longer hide the reality of the atrocious public services in Scotland. Yousaf has been on the end of a hospital class, more cataclysmic than that of Sunak. And so, you know, Scotland is in the eye of the beholder, Joe.
Yeah, and also, you know, all political careers end in failure. Nobody can remain in power, you know, indefinitely without everything going wrong, really. And that's,
but it's only been a year.
I guess Nicola Sturgeon and that sort of, you know, no political party can just maintain dominance forever. And it's, you know, when we thought that the Scottish National Party was just going to rule Scotland forever and ever and ever and ever, as we did, you know, until a couple of years ago, we were kind of ignoring everything the history of politics tells us, which is there's no such, in a democracy, there's no such thing as an everlasting hegemony that just will forever fall apart.
And actually, we had this conversation just yesterday or the day before, about, you know, will the Conservatives disappear? You know, everyone predict, you know, in 97, the Tories will never win again. They've just been in power for 14 years. Labour Party were finished in Scotland. You know, look what happened. You know, nothing is forever.
Yeah, we forget that in a democracy, nothing lasts forever. And also people come back from defeat. Yeah. We love to kind of think, oh, they're doing really well, it's permanent. Oh, they're doing really badly, they're doomed. Actually, that's just called people winning and people losing in a democracy, I think.
James, you are obviously Times' podcast reviewer.
Of course,
you listen to a lot of podcasts. Keir Starmer is, you know, he's in that stage of his, you know, countdown to the election, where he's going on every podcast he can lay his hands on. He's made an appearance on Giles Brandreth's podcast, Rosebud, in which Giles talks to famous people about their formative experiences. And here is a clip of Giles asking Keir Starmer for his first memory.
I've never been asked that before. So, in terms of memory and impression, I think I must have been about 4 years old when we got our first car, a Ford Cortina, a blue Ford Cortina. And I remember the build-up to this and then waiting by the front door for hours for my dad to come home with this new car. That was a first, if you like, vivid memory that I have of me sort of in shorts and a T-shirt, but a striped T-shirt, and the wonder of this thing called a car.
Well, the presenter of Rosebud, Giles Brandreth, joins us. Hello, Giles.
Good to be with you again, Matt.
Well, first of all, congratulations. I managed to ask Keir Starmer something he's not been asked before.
Well, that's a first. There were several firsts in the conversation. I mean, Rosebud's been going since last September. We began with Dame Judi Dench, and we've been through lots of dames, lots of knights. Sir Michael Palin was a particular favourite. But we haven't done many politicians. I met Nicola Sturgeon, had a conversation with her, and I wanted to interview Keir Starmer because I know who he is, and I know he aspires to be Prime Minister, but I don't really know much about him. And finding a politician who can give you 40 minutes to sit down and talk was challenging, but he agreed to it. And what I found interesting was unpacking his childhood with him, because I always ask the same first question, what is your first memory? And then you find out where that was, who were the parents. He talked more about the car. But actually, the when it began to become interesting, the conversation, was when I asked him a question I ask everybody, which is, what was your first recollection of sadness in your life?
In fact, I think we've got the clip of that, actually, Giles.
Or maybe listen to it.
We'll have a listen. So this is you asking for Keir Starmer's first recollection of sadness.
And he said, I don't think your mum's going to make it. Exact words. First time in my life, I actually thought we were going to lose her. And that is a very raw memory. Mm. She pulled through. And then we went through that a number of other times. But that was the very first time as a 13-year-old.
But it's interesting.
And he didn't forewarn me what he was going to say. He didn't say, I've got something difficult to tell you. He just said.
But he did tell you. It's interesting that he told you, in the sense that he He did reach out to you at that moment. Did he call the others as well?
No, he asked me to tell them.
What an extraordinary moment. So that's Keir Starmer calling for being 13. His mum was in hospital and his dad calling to say that she might not make it.
Now, what was interesting about that, obviously, you know, he teared up. And he'd, funnily enough, he'd just come from a shadow cabinet meeting. And sometimes if you've been sort of doing something intense, and we came into the room, we sat down, and you somehow, you sigh. And I was asking these questions, and the answers came a little bit haltingly, but then they began to really come through. And what was interesting about that, the tearful moment, is that it revealed a great deal, A, about his mother's illness, which I didn't know much about. She was severely ill for many years and was thought she wouldn't survive her teens, but did and lived on. But his difficult relationship with his father was totally focused on the mother. And Keir and the other children were left really rather outside the relationship with the father. So all this was quite fascinating. And learning about his father, and his father, who had been a toolmaker, feeling disrespected with the professional people that his father knew. I mean, the thing about these conversations is you do find that people's childhoods are still very vivid to them. Mm. And they don't often talk about them. And obviously, it's interesting to know where a politician, a senior politician, comes from. And I found it was revelatory, touching, but also there were laughs in the conversation as well.
India, given the, I mean, to some extent, Keir Starmer and his dad being a toolmaker has now become a sort of running joke because he does it so often. Actually, he comes across as incredibly human there. Giles has managed to get something out of him that actually lots of other interviewers haven't.
Yeah, I found that second clip very moving, actually. It's interesting, isn't it? Because political interviewers, you know, pin people down or get people on the detail. But actually somebody who doesn't, as a rule, interview politicians is perhaps more likely to get to the human being. I mean, that's, I'm sort of quite shocked by how human that is. You know, you really very rarely hear that kind of candor. And I completely agree with Giles about childhood. You know, your the child you were doesn't die. And it's completely fascinating to go back and meet it.
Well, what did you make of it, James?
I think it gave me a real insight into Keir Starmer, which was that I think there are basically two kinds of boring people. There are boring people who are just very boring and there's really nothing going on there. And there's another kind of boring person, which I think I now understand Keir Starmer is, which is that there's so much sort of pain and turmoil underneath the surface that the boring persona is being kind of created to contain it all. And you can see that there's all this stuff really, really close to the surface, and his whole personality of being a slightly dull person, I think I kind of understand, seems to be a slight sort of protection against all this stuff that really, you know, if you prod it, will just spill out. And he's kind of, I guess, in some way protecting himself from all this stuff. I thought it was, yeah, I mean, really kind of incredible. And I also noticed that when Giles is asking those questions, when politicians talk about their childhood, they give a kind of rehearsed answer and then stop. But he wanted to keep on talking, you know, to get into the next question, Giles had to interrupt him. It was almost like he was in therapy and just couldn't almost stop going into this stuff about his childhood, which is really unusual for a politician, I think.
Do you think it makes a difference, Giles, that bluntly, you're not Laura Koonsberg or Robert Peston, that they come in and think, oh, we're doing a nice podcast with Giles Brandon, he's a nice guy off the telly with the jumpers. And actually, you zero in quite quickly into quite personal stuff.
Yes, it was strange, because obviously he knew that I was a Conservative Member of Parliament. He indeed knew that my daughter is standing in the forthcoming general election. And before we began, he was asking about how the seat was going and how it was going. But at the end of our conversation, after 45 minutes or so, when we had to end, because his aides came into the room and said, it's ending, we got up and quite involuntarily, we hugged. And I thought, this is very, very strange. Here I am, hugging the leader of the Labour Party, and here I am, you know, a staunch Conservative. This is strange. But the point is that politicians are human beings too. And you are right. He does come over as rather a dull person. And having had this conversation, particularly in relation to his father, you could see the love he had for his mother, because she was his mother and she was in illness. But this, he also told me somewhere else in the conversation, I asked him if his father had ever told him he loved him. And that didn't come about right until the end of their lives. So there's a lot going on in there, and it's wonderful to be able to let it out. So I hope he enjoyed it. Certainly afterwards, his team didn't say, actually one of them in the room, but his team didn't phone up and say, we're not comfortable with this. So obviously he wanted to be seen to be human. I mean, you know, it's part and parcel of, he is a politician aspiring to achieve. So he wants people to see him in the round. But I felt it was authentic. I didn't feel There was, when I interviewed Nicola Sturgeon, she was very contained and didn't give anything away, really. But Keir, I did feel, actually was opening up.
Charles, did you like him?
I did like him. I met him before, so I knew I would like him. We get on. But I also was impressed by the caliber of the people around him. I met about four of them, and they were nice guys, and they were courteous and good-humoured and easy. And you can sometimes judge a person, I think, by the company they keep. So it was, from my point of view, it was a good experience. It hasn't changed my politics, but it has changed my view of the leader of the Labour Party and a potential Prime Minister.
Charles, really good to speak to you. Always nice to have you on. Charles Brandreth, thanks very much for joining us on Times Radio. India and James, lovely to see you. James, did you do any impressions?
No. Well, yes, but not for the radio.
Go on.
No, I'm not embarrassing myself.
Can you do a seagull?
Yeah, can you do... Have you heard the...
Not as well as that little kid who dresses in a seagull costume.
Who did you do
an
impression of? Are you intrigued me now?
No, it's not for
radio. Do you do any impressions, India?
I don't, I'm afraid. Although I thought I did quite a good seagull. I'm not going to do it now.
Oh, go on.
But I thought I did quite a good seagull, but that my seagull is nowhere near that little
seagull.
Go on,
India. Let's have your seagull.
No, I'm not doing
seagull.
Do you
do a seagull, man?
I'm going. What?
Do you do a seagull?
No, I might do a seagull another day.
I can do a little squealy pig.
Go on.
A little squealy pig.
Yeah, it's all right, actually, yeah.
That's pretty good.
There we are. Oh, there's the seagull. That's the 9-year-old doing the seagull.
Is that the 9-year-old?
Yeah.
That is
actually the 9-year-old.
Truly extraordinary.
India Knight and James Marriott, you can read them both in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription at thetimes.co.uk. Up next, it's The Impressionists.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk.
The Big Thing. That's the impression
that I get. You start off at Tony Blair.
A conservative party.
And don't forget the hobnob sweetheart.
Rishi Sunak, the closest you can get to AI while still remaining human.
Good morning, Matt.
Politics without the boring bits.
Yes, we're doing it again. The impressionists are back. Partly because, well, there's never a changing list of characters in politics, but also because you were so good last time at sending in your impressions. So if you want to send me your impression as a voice note, 0333 003 2353, I will try and get as many as we can. And joining me now, some of the best political impressionists in the business. John Colshaw is back. John, how are you?
Hello there, very well. Nice to be back in the control room, sir.
It's nice to see you. Rory Bremner's back with us. Hello, Rory.
Hi. Were you doing Charles Brandreth there,
No, but I thought I would. You know, I very much enjoyed the previous section, and I thought we've got to get a Charles in there quick.
Very, very good indeed. We enjoyed it.
And very gracious. Joining us for the first time in the studio, Noreen Skinner. Noreen, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's nice to have you here. We're very excited because if you were listening to the show last week, Noreen popped up on the show quite a lot.
The place was infested with fleas. Some claim that this was down to Boris and Carrie's dog Dylan, but there was no conclusive evidence. In any case, the entire place had to be sprayed with flea killer. I spent several weeks itching.
That's Noreen there reading Liz Truss's book so that you don't have to. Noreen, you must have had quite the week.
really one of the busiest weeks I've had. I'm probably the only person who's excited for Liz to be back for a moment in time. I'm not sure about that, but yeah, it's been insanely busy.
So tell me about when you started doing Liz Truss. How long were you, was that useful for?
49 days. I call myself the now the political hitman because I never would say that I'm an impressionist. I just started doing these parodies of her because I happened to look a little bit like her. Overnight, it kind of went wild. So by the time I'd got on top of the her voice, she's gone. So back to square one.
How long does it take you to get a voice, John? 49 days the sort of length of time that you need?
It does sound like the great title of a movie or something like that. Yeah. You know, there's a follow-up to the 39 steps there somewhere. It depends what you've got to play with, you know. We recorded Dead Ringers last night, and within about an hour, Duncan Wisby had got a brilliant Oliver Dowden all set.
Ooh, wow.
So that's a good one for later. But yeah, so that's sometimes...
49 days.
Yes.
I don't know when one. It could be. It could be anything. Because actually, all these MPs giving up their seats, and you realise that, of course, Keir Starmer gave up Rochdale, which was then taken by George Galloway, as you know. And I thought, well, actually, maybe he thinks it's going to be a spring election, in which case he's only given up Rochdale for Lent.
So, actually, on the subject of Oliver Dowden, this was what happened at Deputy Prime Minister's Questions this week.
It is a pleasure to have another exchange with the Right Honourable Lady in this House, our fifth in 12 months. Any more of these and she'll be claiming it as her principal residence.
Has he finally realised that when he stabbed Boris Johnson in the back to get his mate into number 10, he was ditching their biggest election winner for a pint-sized loser?
I just can't listen to Oliver Dowden and not think it sounds like a speech, a text-to-speech generator. All the words are there.
Yes, exactly.
They don't seem to have any relation to each other.
And that thing when a recording is digitised and plays accidentally too quickly. And there's helium in the room. That seems to have gone on too.
He's a little bit like Rishi too, isn't he? So that funny with that slight sort of lisp and the sort of slight campness, and you heard it. It's extraordinary.
It's this rhythm that sort of goes when you stand in front of the dispatch box, this is the way you have to do it.
Presumably, it's not like the old days.
Different stratas of tunes. Some down here, others this way. Some wee wee down, Gordon Brown, wee wee down in that manner. Love his voice, very sonorous.
Happy memories.
Yeah, I could listen to that. Oh, strange, that's a weird thing to say. I could listen to that
just
all day.
This is good, Gordon Brown all day.
No, there's plenty more where that came from.
How far back can we go? Has he got a Gladstone?
It's in my Gladstone bag.
Do you do Angela Rayner?
Yes, I've attempted. I'm bombastic. I just got to shout all the time. Like, I don't know if you listen to me, but I'm just going to shout, and I do some right good punchlines. I mean, it's a pint-sized loser. All right, I know it was Nadine Dorries' one, but it's right good. And you know, I'm like a stand-up comedian on the side. You know, and I think everyone needs to know that people say about the deep state. You know, more like a deep state of affairs. Am I right? No, conservatives, another joke.
Well, yeah. Because you could tell she knows what she's doing like a stand-up because she really fluffed that joke to start with.
Yeah.
She's got a right pick on it. So she stopped and then did it again rather than, you know, because don't fluff the setup.
Yeah, just embrace the take two and run with it.
Yeah. I'm imagining her like just doing all this little material and tryout nights. And then this is her big moment. I just find it really, it's really fascinating.
So what do you do when you're not being Liz Truss?
I sit there and wait for Liz Truss to come back.
Waiting by the phone.
I'm just waiting, yeah. Always waiting. Loads of different things. I do, actually, a lot of the time I'm doing Sybil Fawlty in Fawlty Towers. That's kind of where the impression kind of parody thing started.
Wow. You see, now that's a very interesting one because, of course, you know, when I stopped writing Fawlty Towers, a lot of people stopped doing so. So it's quite interesting. And I'd like to hear a woke Sybil. Could you do that? I don't think people can do that.
He's changed. People's voices change, don't they?
Because it's all changed from that. You know, it's all. And then it suddenly got a little bit closer. But I'd love to hear your Sybil.
Oh, I know. Well, I would do it, really, but I'm probably not really meant to, especially down these day and age, you know.
No, that sounds perfect. Right, Manuel.
Oh, dear. That's one for the young people. Now, the other thing I want to ask is, Rory, or well, maybe you as well, Rory or John, Humza Yousaf, if you... Have you bothered?
Oh, yes. Now, Lewis McLeod, our friend and Dead Ringers colleague.
Does he get all the duff ones? You're like,
oh, no. Oh, he's great, Lewis.
he's Scottish. Great.
Lewis has turned him into this character who's sort of like permanently spooked, very, very nervous,
yeah.
Always looking over his shoulder, doesn't know what's going to happen next.
Wait for the police to knock on the door.
But he's brilliant. Lewis, he's the unsung hero, isn't he, John? I mean, he's wonder. He's obviously Scottish. And he's just a wonderful Billy Connolly and all those. But Humza Yousaf, that's a, you know, and that you don't, you might not need that after today.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to go the same way as Liz Truss.
I remember, because of course last year, it was only just every year ago when Nicola Sturgeon went, and she resigned the same day that Raquel Welch died, and BBC Scotland rang me out and said, how did I think she'd be remembered? So I said, well, the fur bikini in a million years BC. and there was a pause, and they said, so what about the referendum? And I thought, oh God. And Fred McCauley, you know Fred, John, he said, well, that would have made the Shawshank Redemption a slightly different film if you'd had a poster of Nicola Sturgeon instead of Raquel Welch covering the tunnel.
But you might not need that. And what about, are there any people you're excited about coming up through any of the parties?
I would say I'm actually quite intrigued by, from a comical perspective, is Penny Mordaunt, because I feel like her stand up and fight speech was kind of like the equivalent to Liz's cheese one a couple of years back, and I want to see what her sequel is. Like, what's the sit down and chill speech? What's that going to be like?
I love the way you're filing the speeches, her stand-up and fight speech as opposed to Liz Truss's cheese speech. It's like Ian Duncan Smith's quiet man speech. Just filed away as moments in history.
You must be able to do a good Ian Duncan Smith. What have you, Volvi?
Oh, yeah. But
pained at the very mention of it then.
You're being very unfair. It was, you know, he was like Casper the Friendly Ghost, you know. I mean, what I loved was his great speech. He said, the quiet man is here to stay and he's turning up the volume. He was gone about 2 weeks later. I imagine the quiet man who goes back home, the quiet man is here to stay and he's turning down the duvet.
We are doing impressions again. On Times Radio, we had a lovely message. Spencer in Shoreditch has said this segment is the best thing on talk radio. But I think he means lowercase rather than uppercase, because that's very different what they do on the 17th floor here. Right, let's turn our attention to some of our listener impressions, and we will assess how good they are. This is one we've had in. I mean, it's the impression that perhaps nobody knew we needed in our lives. This is from Steve.
Hi, Matt. It's Ed Davey here from the Liberal Democrats. Did you miss that? Yes, it's Ed Davey from the Liberal Democrats here. I have a propensity to say the name of my party, Liberal Democrats, really quickly. So if you miss that, well, you better be quick, because it's time to vote Liberal Democrats.
That's really good.
Good observation. Great.
Yes. Liberal Democrats.
But what he's done there, Roy, is he's found the hook. Because otherwise it's just a man talking. But he's found actually the thing that you hadn't noticed before.
Yes,
absolutely. As John will tell you, sorry, John. Because you know Matt Ford, and he said the key to Keir Starmer was just to say the Metropolitan Police, and sometimes it's just two words, and it just that's a well done. Sorry, John, I interrupted.
No, not at all. It's that wonderful Ed Davey impression there. It contains all of the things that we didn't realise that we'd noticed about that voice.
Yes.
Opens up a little door in your head that you didn't realise was there. You know, the stretchy voice, rather like cheese on a pizza that snaps quickly at the end.
And the tone was just right as wasn't it?
And you could see Ed Davey's sort of, you know, almost, you know, Joker-esque face. Grinning a little. It put all that in your imagination.
Yeah.
Just right.
Well, Steve, that's our favourite. Well, I was going to say it's our favourite so far. It's the only one so far, so of course
best
it is.
Best one today.
Let's have one now from Andy.
Matt, this is Andy Scorgi here. And I'm going to do... And the Pope wears red socks because his feet are steeped in the blood of the Protestant people of Northern Ireland.
Is that Lee Anderson?
Ian Paisley. I mean, there's not a lot of call for Ian Paisley these days, but, you know.
No, it's very much in the archives, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the Ark. Never mind the archives.
Yes, no, no, yes, they tried to make me go to rehab. I said, no, no, no.
Okay, where are we? This is excellent. This is one that says, it's been put in the script in front of me. It says, Warren's doing John Major, brackets, I think.
Good morning, Edwina. Yes, I'd like some breakfast. 2 fried eggs, please.
Another one for the young people.
I've
no idea why, but the voice of Paul O'Grady comes into my mind, saying, "Zero, zero." That sounds like, you know, a very cheap sat nav you'd get.
That's very good.
Now I want eggs. Yeah.
Yes. Which is, yeah. How would you like them? Boiled, I think.
Yes.
Ooh. Yes. 4 minutes.
Have you got Edwina Coe in your repertoire, Edwina?
I would love to say yes, but absolutely not.
Again, not a lot of calls.
I had her in mind once. She was the future once.
Okay, we've now got... this is from JL. Says, this is my mate Mark, gives you Maggie as Voldemort.
Way in Slytherin, believe in popular capitalism, in a property-owning democracy.
Ooh.
Oh, gosh. I want to hear more. I'm quite scared.
Yeah, that's right. It turns Steve Nallon down to 33 RPM.
Do you do the deepest? It's not...
No, I would love to, though, because I think she's... it would just be wrong not to, wouldn't it? That's on my list of to-do.
But what's interesting...
No, you don't have to.
No?
I mean, of all the people...
You are so brilliant. You're the future now. Don't worry.
I only do the old ones.
Angela Rayner. No, you're... Rayner's brilliant. Your trust is brilliant. Sorry, I've gone to Chris Tarrant there. Yes. I spent 6 months last year being Chris Tarrant. Every now and then it comes back. I was really praising you, saying they're so good.
Of course, because you did Quiz.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Back to you. Back to John. Back to the others. Okay. Yes. Quiz for a couple of months. And Chris kept saying, it's absolutely nothing like me at all. Who are you being? I never say T and he. do all the time. So all I was saying was Liz Truss was brilliant and Angela Drain was brilliant. So don't worry about Margaret Thatcher.
Right, let's have another one then. This is from Kevin.
The dinosaurs roamed the earth for millions of years until their untimely demise 65 million years ago. We now know that one of them managed to survive this mass extinction, the Chorlosaurus. To find out more about this remarkable beast, listen to Matt Chorley, the dinosaur of Times Radio.
Very nice.
Boom.
Very nice,
that
Kevin.
That was really good.
Yeah, well, we're clipping that and using that as a jingle. Presumably you've got Attenborough up your sleeve.
Oh, it's one of those every impressionist by law has to have a David Attenborough. And it does make you feel so much better when one speaks in this way. You feel that enthusiasm, that imagination and love of the natural world.
He's changed as well, hasn't he, John? Yeah, he's changed so much. Because when he was younger, it was very open and all, and now it's become much more... And that last impression on the who sent it into you was late Attenborough. And I thought entirely convincing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Very moving, nice. Too. Moving.
Yeah.
Yes, very indeed.
Thank you. That was really good.
Thank you, Kevin. We've been moved. Now, this is a very niche Times Radio one. This is Steve in Kensal Green doing our correspondent in Australia, Bernard Lagan.
We're gonna have a marvellous Conservative Party conference.
No. What's that? Hang on. That sounds more like William Hague to me. Who's that doing, William Hague? Are we having the Bernard? Have we got the Bernard Lagan one? Oh, we don't know what. That's all we've got. Well, let's move on then. Let's find what Mark's done. Mark Janes.
The search area, the new search area, is an area of about 15,000 square kilometres, which is quite small compared to the previous searches.
No, that's the real Bernard Lagan. Hang on a minute. What's...
Oh my God!
We don't even know anymore.
So much easier. We could have just clipped up a load of celebrities and said, "Here's another listener doing Maggie Smith." So we're going back to Steve in Kensal Green. This will make sense now.
We're gonna have a marvelous Conservative Party conference, but first the news.
Well, it's Bernard Lagan here, and as usual, a dingo has run off into the bush with a child. While the parents weren't paying attention, they were outside the tent having a fag or something. And as usual, the dingo comes up, takes the child off, or it might have been a kangaroo, or possibly a crocodile. I don't know. Anyway, a huge manhunt is on.
God, I feel like I'm having
that
a
was a cross between Steve Irwin and something. Ah, something very deep. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, Les Patterson, maybe. Something around there.
That's it. That's exactly it.
It's like Steve talking Irwin and gargling at the same time. If you've got some rust on the wing of a Morris Minor and you need to grind it off, just talk at it like that. Be glooming in 20 minutes.
Oh, good stuff.
Okay, let's move away from all that Bernard Lagan business. This is actually man Mark James.
Hi, Matt. Mark from Andover. See if you can get this one. Gordon's alive!
Oh, give us a clue.
Who could he possibly be doing, John?
Well, Tony Blair. You know,
exactly. Somebody who is so, so gracious. Brian Blessed, always very gracious whenever anybody asks him to say, Gordon's alive! He just does it straight away with no complaint.
Whenever he's trying to do it on Times Radio, he somehow breaks Zoom. It's so loud. There's like a thing on Zoom where it goes, no, we're not doing that.
He has to stand back from the microphone. Shall I do it now?
There we are. He's broken Zoom.
All your needles go. He's a wonderful
man. Do you do Theresa May?
No, I mainly do Nadine Dorries. That would be the one that I kind of focus most on. And actually, she would really like to just... I'd just like to let you know that I also have a book that's out, and, you know, The Pint-Sized Loser is actually my quote. So, you know, I just want everyone to know that, okay?
you know, that is so good that I'm sitting here getting excited.
I try to do a bit of Boris, you know, but it's not my domain, you know.
I think when he was young, saying he wanted to be king of the world, I think he would have been exactly.
Boy Boris.
Boy Boris, yeah, there you go.
The formative years.
I'm very select.
I think it's very good. Keep going.
Should we have a Trump off? Do you do Trump?
Yes.
Let's have a proper three-way Trump off.
We're going to have a three-way Trump puff. We're going to make it great again.
Look, I think it's a three-way Trump puff, you know, this is very, very bad. I think it's a witch hunt. I don't think it's done by smart people. I think it's very, very bad. And, you know, it's needed Matt Chorley, a very smart guy. He needed a glass of water.
The last time I had a three-way was with Stormy Daniels and Melania, so it's a long time ago.
But hey, I'm up for having a three-way right now, and I can see that Matt is choking, and I understand what that's like, all right?
That's where you are. I didn't know. I haven't seen Melania for about 4 years. She's in the Times radio studio. Who knew?
Let's Oh, I'm completely losing the plot. Have we got any more? We've got one more. We've got another.
Let's have a little bit of Joe Biden just to calm things down, right? You're going to be okay. You're going to be okay.
Very soon.
Oh, that's so good.
Exactly. The James Webb Telescope giving us images of the universe from 13 billion years ago. Man, I was just a kid back then.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's so really good. Nice. Great, you've got two presidential candidates in 4 more years as a prognosis.
I don't mean that offensively,
that's
but
super.
You could send me to sleep. That was really nice.
Yeah, it's very sort of...
You do some audio books like that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You know, 45 seconds and you're going to be, slumberizing till the break of day.
have you got a Joe Biden, Rory?
Not like that, I haven't. That's super. Well done. Yeah. No, I got about a sentence and a half and then... And then somehow goes. But it's funny because, John, you'll know this, because he says one sentence and then the next one gets a little bit looser, doesn't it? And the consonants trip over each other.
Yeah. So,
you
know,
did you see?
Well, I live in a world where we have. No. Who are you? Why are you in my house? And he's the sane one, of course, you know.
Did you see he did a Jeremy Corbyn this week and read the instructions on the auto cue?
Oh no.
Yeah. Oh. Have we got the clip of that? Okay, yeah. So this is because obviously Jeremy Corbyn did strong message here his first Labour Party government speech. Here's Joe Biden.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years.
Pause.
That's brilliant.
I remember in my days of doing local radio in the Northwest, a newsreader was reading out the story in this sort of local radio way. The leader of the opposition, pictured left, taking the script out of a newspaper, convenience and forgot to take out pictured left.
Very good, very good.
Today's newspaper thing, if David Frost, have you seen this thing? He talks about the Tony Blair interview in the Times last week, and David Frost says competence and smartness are not the most valuable qualities for leadership. Later on, that is why competent administration, the capable managerialism that so many seem to wish for, simply isn't enough on its own. But I think it's a good start, isn't it?
It is what you would hope for, really. Fitted a standard.
Now, before we let you all go, we might as well get our money's worth out of you. Noreen, you did an excellent Matt Shirley on Times Radio, politics at the boring bits as Liz Truss. But we can get some others, can't we? Who should we get some free voiceover work? Can we get Angela Rayner, Matt Shirley, politics at the boring bits on Times Radio?
Fine, if you want me to say it, I will do. I'm just going to say it right now. Okay, it's politics without the boring bits with Matt Shirley. And listen to it. It's a great punchline.
Very good. Very good. What should we get John to do?
Oh, I think a bit of Tom, don't you?
Oh, yeah, let's go on then.
Yes, yes. Well, Times Radio, you say, but remember, time is my business.
Rory, what can we get out of you?
I would let you have David Cameron. I think this, I often listen when I'm on a plane or somewhere, and on my. Sorry, I'm going to spin this out a little bit longer because I'm going into Boris. I'm confusing myself. Anyway, tune in to politics without the boring bits with Matt Chorley.
Very nice.
I segued out of camera because I was so obsessed with him coming back.
Because he was on the show earlier. And can anyone do Andrew Neil?
Why not? Of course. Well, Andrew Neil's another one that's been taken over by the wonderful Lewis McLeod. Does he do it? He has it on Newsnight.
We've had so many messages. This is excellent. So good to have intelligent comic relief. Someone's canvassing in Hampshire, listening to the show. I mean, I hope we've covered your party off somewhere. This is excellent. I've got tears running down my face. So thank you so much for all your messages. Thank you for all of your impressions as well. Should we do it again?
Okay, yes,
let's do it again. Yeah. We'll get
it's
you back in.
Jolly party, isn't it?
Thank you so much.
It's a lot of fun. It's a nice way to round off a great week of politics. Rory Bremner, John Coleshaw, Noreen Skinner, thanks so much for coming in. And what a lot of fun. I nearly died coughing then.
Well, that was a lot of fun, and we'll have them back again very soon. If you want to send us your political impressions, WhatsApp me 0333 003 2353 or email matt@times.radio. But for now, from me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.